Welcome everyone to KanjuraCast, where we will discuss every Godzilla movie. I've been watching Godzilla movies my whole life and I love talking about them. I'm your Canadian kaiju, so let's get into it. In this episode, we are discussing King Kong vs. Godzilla, released on August 11th, 1962. There was also a re-edit American version created by Universal International Incorporated, released on June 26th, 1963. Directed by Ishiro Honda. Special effects by Eiji Tsuburaya. Written by Shinichi Sekizawa. Produced by Tomoyuki Tanaka. Starring Tadeo Takashima, Kenji Sahara, Yu Fujigi, Ichiro Arashima, Mi Hama. Plot. Low ratings and frustration led Mr. Taiko, the head of Pacifica Pharmaceuticals, to use giant monsters to boost viewership of the TV shows his company sponsors. To boost ratings, he sends out two men to find and bring back a monster that was seen on Faroe Island. Around this time, an American nuclear submarine gets caught in an iceberg. The iceberg collapses, and from the collision, this releases Godzilla. Godzilla has been trapped there since 1955. Showa era, 1954 to 1975. This is the third film in the Showa's era series of films. It contains an iconic scene and marks the beginning of a trend that was not always well received. The iconic scene is that of Kong being transported by balloons. This was referenced recently in the legendary MonsterVerse, King Kong vs. Godzilla, and also started a battle of funny versus horror for the Godzilla series. To appeal to a wider audience, especially children, the studio started pressuring for a more comical approach. This began the clash of most working on the films to push back against the dumbing down of the monsters and the tone of the movies in general. This film also had several firsts that I'll highlight as we go. Development. The development of this film went through many stages, many hands, and even attempted lawsuits. It includes the choice of stop motion versus suitmation, several concept changes, and a script traveling to more continents than I've been to. To be fair, I've just been to one continent, so this script is definitely more traveled than I. Suitmation. To start off, we have to check in on the ever-evolving process of dudes in a suit. I mean, of course, Suitmation. In this film, Shoichi Hiroshi performed as King Kong, and Hiro Nakajima returns as Godzilla. Essentially given full reign of their choreography, Hiroshi and Nakajima based their moves on professional wrestling. This sport was growing in popularity in Japan at this time, and these two would rehearse for hours on end. In particular, they modeled the fight scenes on the very popular wrestler Toyo Nobori. For a quick sideline into some Japanese pro wrestling history, after retiring as a rikishi from sumo wrestling, Toyo Nobori transitioned into professional wrestling. Debuting on December 12, 1954 for the Japanese Wrestling Association, Toyo Nobori rose in popularity. Okay, back to the movie. At one point before filming began, special effects director Eiji Tsuburaya considered using stop-motion animation instead of suitmation for the film. Obviously, this was a clear reference to the incredible 1933 King Kong film and Willis O'Brien's stop-motion technique, a topic I will delve into later. However, budget constraints prevented this from being a reality, and the tried-and-true suitmation was once again employed. Among many advantages, suitmation is simply the more cost-effective approach. However, some brief stop motion was used in a couple of quick sequences. Two of these sequences were animated by Minoru Nakano. Minoru Nakano worked for Tsuburaya Productions for nearly 30 years as an optical photographer and a visual effects technician. He passed away recently in 2021 at 82 years. His work spans over 25 films and TV projects, including two acting credits. Now, with the decision made for suitmation to be used, and wrestling moves perfected, it was time for the suits themselves to be altered and improved. To give Godzilla an improved appearance as a dinosaur, the following changes were made. Removal of his tiny ears, three toes instead of four, central dorsal fins size increased, and an overall bulkier body. Also created for specific shots were a meter tall model and a small puppet. And even a tail prop was created for fierce tail action. That's right, this film's got it. Kong's suit provided challenges starting right from the initial design phase. The very first suit was dismissed for being too cute. Kong was too fat, with very long legs, and it took several design drafts before approval was given. The next challenge was the design of Kong's face. It had to be different from the original film. It was decided that the face of a Japanese macaw would be used as the likeness model instead of a standard gorilla. Two masks were created to accomplish this. Two sets of arms were also constructed. One set was operated by poles, and the other was form-fitting for performer Hiroshi for all the interactive and wrestling scenes. The Kong suit was unfortunately very challenging for Hiroshi. He had to be sewn into the suit to avoid showing any zippers. He would also have very long shooting scenes due to this. A meter-tall model and a puppet were created as well. Also, a giant prop of Kong's hand was built. We also can't forget the giant octopus. However, no suits were harmed in the making of those scenes. Instead, four live octopi were employed. Three were released, one became dinner. Stop-motion tentacles were created for one scene. Once again, a round of applause and gratitude for the performers and crew employing these techniques. A lot of work and dedication goes into scenes that are often 3 minutes long or less, so it's important to highlight crews such as this. Original concept controversy. Now, I mentioned earlier about lawsuits during the early development of the film. I am by no means a legal expert, so I'll just outline a simple overview. I still feel it's an important aspect to note, and it's one of those things I find interesting in how a movie is made from all aspects of the industry. Willis O'Brien, animator of the original stop-motion Kong, put together concept art and a screenplay treatment for a feature, King Kong Meets Frankenstein. Yeah. This would see King Kong fighting an equal-sized Frankenstein monster in San Francisco. Because, of course, San Francisco. O'Brien went to RKO, an American film production and distribution studio, to secure the rights to use the Kong character. Now, Universal wasn't going to give up the rights to the Frankenstein name, so the story was changed to King Kong vs. Jinko. By this time, RKO ceased film production. Enter John Beck, a producer who took on the task of finding a studio to make this film. Hiring George Worthing Yates to write a full screenplay from the provided treatment, the story was changed again to King Kong vs. Prometheus. The major sticking point for any studio that John Beck pitched this film to was the cost of stop-motion animation. This led John Beck and this script to begin its international tour to find a studio. Soon, Toho met with Beck, and since they had wanted to make a King Kong movie for some time now, Frankenstein's monster was recast for Godzilla. The script would now be rewritten by Shinichi Sekizawa from Yates' script. The attempted lawsuit would come into play between O'Brien and Beck. John Beck's shopping of the script was done behind O'Brien's back. O'Brien didn't have the funds to go through with the lawsuit and was never credited for his idea. John Beck also caught the ire of Marion C. Cooper, who was the producer and co-director of the original 1933 film. Being bitterly opposed to the project, especially the use of a man in a suit over stop-motion animation, filed a lawsuit of his own against John Beck, claiming he was the sole owner of the King Kong character. John Beck, Toho, and Universal were all named in the lawsuit. It also didn't go through because it was revealed that Cooper was not the legal owner of the Kong character as he stated. The legal ownership of Kong is an entire podcast series in and of itself, I've found out. That is, it's a fun rabbit hole I would encourage you listeners to go down one day, preferably on a cold Canadian afternoon with a warm beverage within your reach. Theatrical release. King Kong vs. Godzilla was released in Japan by Toho on August 11, 1962. It turned in an estimated box office of $8.7 million. In 1983, for the Godzilla 1983 Revival Festival, King Kong vs. Godzilla was the feature. This festival was so successful, it's known as the catalyst for the future relaunching of the franchise with 1983's The Return of Godzilla. Themes. This film, in many respects, began the departure from the horror themes that began with 1954's Godzilla. Stemming right from the top, director Ishiro Honda decided the movie would be a satire of Japan's television industry at the time. Many decades later, I don't think much has changed in the TV industry as a whole, but maybe that's just me. Outrageous show concepts and publicity stunts were becoming the go-to method to gain audience attention in 1962. This sparked a debate of how TV in general was having an effect on Japanese culture. This led to Honda's decision to use King Kong vs. Godzilla to show that the TV show creators were no longer taking the audience seriously and merely using them by taking them for granted. This theme obviously ties into the core of the theme of the original 1933 King Kong movie, in my opinion. Essentially, Kong is brought to New York to be put on display for the purpose of being the greatest attraction of all time. Then, pure destruction ensues. One main theme that was still being maintained was that Godzilla is seen as the villain of the series and also this film. A big part of this decision, even despite the new direction the film was being taken, was that King Kong was seen as the bigger draw, hence Kong's top billing, and that he was shown as being the winner. If I may be so bold, I'd like to thank Legendary for fixing this in Godzilla vs. Kong. Make no mistake, I really enjoy the current Kong, but I mean, come on. Ancient nuclear-powered dinosaur versus really big gorilla. Really? Even being powered by electricity won't help, but I digress. King Kong 1933. I feel it's important to take a look at the original 1933 King Kong film. It's still one of my favorite monster movies. I find it still incredible in how it looks and how I believe it still holds up today. Yes, I know Citizen Kane is at the top of the must-watch list of movies, but King Kong 1933 is worthy of that list as well. In fact, I'm sure it's there. It has to be there. Alright, rant over. Let's do a quick-ish sidetrack into an all-time great monster movie. King Kong is an adventure horror monster film directed and produced by Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Schoedsack, with special effects by Willis H. O'Brien. It was produced and distributed by RKO Radio Pictures. It is the first film in the King Kong franchise, starring Fay Wray, Robert Armstrong, and Bruce Cabot. King Kong opened in New York City on March 2, 1933. Plot. Carl Denham, a filmmaker of wildlife films in remote and exotic locations, charters the Venture for his new project. He discovers Anne Darrow and promises her an adventure of a lifetime. Traveling to Skull Island, they capture King Kong and bring him back to New York City to be the 8th wonder of the world. What could go wrong? Stop motion animation. Willis H. O'Brien and his assistant Buzz Gibson became pioneers in numerous techniques in order to animate Kong and the numerous creatures appearing in the film. The painstaking process of stop motion meant scenes that perhaps lasted a few minutes on screen or less took days and or weeks to complete. For example, the fight between Kong and the T-Rex took 7 weeks to shoot. One of the biggest issues came with the problem of lighting. Scenes taking so long to make meant the lighting would change as time went on. They utilized a surface gauge to keep track of the performance and match everything from shoot day to shoot day. The detail that had to go into this, I can only imagine. Impact. There are numerous impacts of this film to highlight, but I want to focus on one of the more interesting aspects, at least to me. Without starting a vicious debate about right or wrong, I want to go over the censorship concerns of the film. First, let's go over the motion picture production code itself. From 1934 to 1968, it served as a set of industry guidelines for self-censorship of content. This code was used by the majority of motion pictures released by the major studios of the United States until it was replaced by the MPAA film rating system. 1933's King Kong caused stricter decency rules and went through several scene trimmings and/or full cuts for the following. The brontosaurus mauled a crewman in the water. The brontosaurus chased one up a tree and killed him. Kong undresses Anne Darrow and sniffs his fingers. Kong biting and stepping on natives when he attacks the village. Kong biting a man in New York. And Kong mistaking a sleeping woman for Anne Darrow and dropping her to her death after realizing his mistake. Yeah. Now, I wasn't alive as far back as 1933, but I can't help but think of when I started watching films from my childhood to now. Specifically the changes in what was deemed to be too gory, intense, or racy to what happens now. I've seen that needle move forward and back throughout my long career of movie watching. Release. With a budget of $672,000, an opening weekend of $90,000, and a worldwide box office of $5.3 million, King Kong was considered a resounding success. Home media. It wasn't until the 1956 re-release that people could see the film from the comfort of their living rooms. The first television broadcast was on March 5th, 1956. In 1984, King Kong made some history as being one of the first films to be released on Laserdisc by the Criterion Collection. Remember Laserdisc? It was the first movie to have an audio commentary track. Legacy. There is certainly an earned amount of legacy for King Kong's film origin. These include, in 1975, Kong was named one of the 50 best American films by the American Film Institute. In 1981, a video game entitled Donkey Kong, starring a character with similarities to Kong, was released. In 1991, the film was deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress and selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry. In 1998, the AFI ranked the film number 43 on its list of the 100 greatest movies of all time. I knew it was on the list. I knew it. As I've mentioned already, the stop-motion effects by Willis H. O'Brien revolutionized special effects, perhaps the greatest in the film industry. The film is also one of the biggest inspirations for Godzilla, with Tomoyuki Tanaka, the creator of Godzilla, interviewed as saying, "I felt like doing something big. That was my motivation. I thought of different ideas, I like monster movies, and I was influenced by King Kong." Hope y'all enjoyed this episode. I've been watching Godzillas my whole life, and I love learning about how these movies came to be. I'm happy to share what I've learned, and most importantly, my fandom with you all. Please reach out to @KenjuraCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads, and let's talk Godzilla.
Hey everyone, Lee the Editor here. Thank you all so much for listening to this, the third episode of KenjuraCast. If you heard any music or sound effects that you'd like to use in your own projects, or simply want to support the original artists, you can find all the links to the various assets used in the paste bin available in the description. We'd still like to shout out the original artists and encourage you to visit their respective profiles at the websites mentioned. For music, we recommend you check out the profile Tavari, that's T-V-A-R-I, on Pixabay.com. For sound effects, we recommend you check out the profiles Spotty Leonard and Pan Zen, both found on freesound.org. That's it for now. We'll see you all next time in Episode 4, the start of the sci-fi section of the Showa-era series of films. Buh-bye.